Daryl Kipper and Bourne Show back after a very busy weekend. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, and Jake the Snake Schultz. On the next 2 hours, including our Leaf Edition hour here, covering what was a terrific weekend, led by Hockey Day in Canada, where all seven Canadian clubs were in action. And it was led by the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think. Although we will get into Connor McDavid in the National Hour a lot more.
Criminal. This McDavid fella.
Wow. But in the meantime, a tale of two games Saturday night in Montreal, where we saw one version of the Leafs against Montreal and then another one.
Yeah.
And Sammy, of course, very emotional throughout the whole night.
Did you have him written off when it was 3-0 Montreal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Of course he did.
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
Well, I think it's more about just, it's just what drives you insane about this hockey team is that they come off their best performance in a month against the Devils where they really look good. They control the play. They outshoot an opponent. And then they go into Hockey Day in Canada against their red-hot rival in their building, and they just crap all over themselves for the first 20 minutes, and it pisses you off. Mm-hmm. And then what pisses you off even more is that they look like the best team in the world for two periods to come back and win.
It's like a bad act. You just can't quit them.
It's just a really, really infuriating team at times.
Yeah, the best type to cover. Yeah.
Maybe the best time to stay off your Twitter account, though.
Were you on it earlier?
Oh, you think I care about, like, I sent a tweet about them being bad in the first period? Of course I did, yeah.
Was that as frustrated as you've been all year watching that first 20 minutes?
Easily. That's as bad as they've played. That could have easily been 6-0 if it wasn't for Joe Wall.
You know, but then you loved them at the end, right?
Of course. Kipper, like, who do you think you're talking to here? Like, what do you think I am? Like,
there's no thoughts beyond the immediate moment for Sam.
You think I'm Ron McLean or Kevin Bieksa here, pal? Look who you're talking to.
You can tell he's young, though, right? He's got the energy to go up and down the roller coaster.
I don't know. Right? I don't understand what you think or who you think you're talking to here. Like, you think you're going to call out and be like, oh, you're a Dumbo for sending a mad tweet about the Leafs. Like, yeah.
I'm just saying.
Seems like you kind of are.
I'm not calling you a Dumbo.
Yeah, listen.
I'm not calling you a Dumbo. What I'm telling you is, just be a little bit more patient. That's all.
No, the time for patience was in 2018.
But you could do that. Almost shift to shift. No. If you wanted to.
Yeah, definitely shift to shift compared to laying an absolute egg in Montreal against the Habs. Like, listen, what I said at that time was completely accurate, and what happened after that was great. I have no regrets of my tweet. Zero. And people are like, own it. Take this back. I'm like, no, I'm just not going to do it.
Sam's like a Fitbit or like one of those things that just like, it tells you, you can tell where you're at. If you need sleep, if your heart rate's up, it's just, he's like a.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Biometric for the Leafs.
For sure. Okay. So what was the big change for you, between loving them and hating them?
The puck entering the net, I guess. You know, that's like it, them actually getting shots. Like, I still don't think they were great for long stretches of that game, even after the first period. But they started scoring, and Team Canada starter Sam Montembeau didn't look too great throughout that game. They just, pucks entered the net, and they ended up winning. But Joe Wall still had to bail them out for the second and third period. He was spectacular. To me, that's the biggest story of the game, is how good he was. So, yeah. I don't know. I felt good because they beat the Habs, and there's all the memes about Wi-Fi pointing at the scoreboard and all that stuff. Like, it's great, but yeah.
For the record, good time to not fight Ryan Reeves there. You're up.
Of course. Why would he?
Yeah. I happened to spend that night with my one friend who's a Montreal Canadiens fan. So I watched the first period with a Montreal Canadiens fan and had to hear such cool slogans as stop, doc, and roll, I believe.
Oof.
And
what's that about?
No, yeah, doc and roll, I believe, was one of them too. You know, like, Habs fans were feeling it, so. Quite the pendulum swing, emotionally.
Right. Let's find out exactly what was said after that first period. Perhaps Greg Berube just showed him Sam's tweet in between periods. Let's find out Craig Berube on the message in the first intermission.
Well, just win more battles. Like, just, we watched and they skated and we didn't win any battles. We didn't win any puck battles and exposed the middle of the ice in the first period. I mean, all three goals are preventable. And, you know, we're just a little bit loose. And, you know, it's, again, it's about winning battles.
They looked, Montreal looked really, really fast, and the Leafs looked really, really slow.
Yeah, that was the takeaway, wasn't it? It was
for
like,
me, yeah.
God, Montreal's flying out there.
Flying.
And that, to me, anytime the other team looks super fast, you're probably not where you're supposed to be defensively, right? No one's slowing anyone up, no cutoffs, no interference, just a track meet. With some defensive miscues. Philippe Myers wasn't awesome. Max Domi had a couple of tough looks.
Yeah.
It you know, it wasn't pretty. Bad as it gets.
Yeah, I think Myers ended up playing, what, 6 minutes the whole game?
Is that what
yeah,
that
like was, yeah. He started to, they started to go to 5D men and move
Morgan
things
Riley
around.
Morgan Riley played 16 and a half.
Yeah.
Lowest he's played in
McCabe,
8 years or something.
The most in his career.
I think he was up near 26.
26.
Yeah. No way.
Yes.
He's their most important D.
Yeah. No question.
I mean, he's physical, he defends, yeah. He's the top PK guy, he kind of anchors a pair. So
kinda
what
have taken over for Jake Muzzin.
I would agree with that.
Yep.
And so now they're like, all right, we're going to pair him with Morgan Riley.
So what was your thoughts on the game on Saturday night?
Just kind of like what we've seen in the past where they can dig themselves in a hole and then just flip a switch and the big boys take over and, right? And...
By the way, kind of Myers caught, played 8-14.
8-14, yeah. Right. I'm kind of caught between, I like the discipline that Craig Berube's brought them in the first half, but...
You're worried it's sliding.
It's just, it may be just too hard to not open it up when you need it. And when you're chasing, you need it.
Yeah.
And... kind of got to live with the fact that you're always kind of coming back to your game breakers. But then...
Yeah, I mean, those guys weren't any good.
How is that any different than Edmonton? How is that any different anywhere else in the league? The teams are built, and we're going to see tonight. It's game night, of course. Tampa Bay Lightning in town. Okay. Kucherov, Point.
Yeah.
Right? That's their team.
Most teams go as their best guys go. But I wouldn't say their best guys brought them back in it on Saturday.
No, but, I mean, Willie, obviously, yeah. the game-breaking moments.
Yeah.
Right?
Hey, how about if you're a Leafs fan, you had to love Lane Hutson getting a welcome to the NHL moment from Willie. As you put it, Willie just wearing him like a backpack on the way to the net.
That's just
too big, too strong.
It's just
another
thing, too, for a young team like that. And they've had... amazing success beating some very good teams and then finding themselves in a huge night up 3-0. And it's almost like they sat in the dressing room and was like,
oh no,
we still got 40 minutes to go. Like, are we this good?
Yeah.
And it's like,
no,
you're not this good. And we just
definitively
we're just going to show you why you're not this good. And Lane Hutson has got great accolades in the last month. And a lot of it's, you know, well-earned. Mm-hmm. But then you end up -5. We're making fun of those guys for the Leafs.
-5?
He was -5.
Ooh.
Like, that's a tough night. So when you're on the ice, you're really good and really bad at the same time.
Yeah. Things get turned around on a pretty crazy moment there with McMahon grabbing Matthew Nye's stick from the bench and shooting one in on a 2-on-1 right after they rip a 4-0 shot off the crossbar.
That's exactly it. Like, it's a, you know, they've...
Game of...
Yeah, and that broke them out the other way, and they go down and shoot it. But I thought Bobby McMahon was awesome on Saturday.
Yeah.
Like, he was looking like a young kipper out there. Just flying up and down.
Called him one of the most underrated bottom six players.
I believe he called him the best bottom six player in the league.
I don't know that he's a bottom six player anymore. His ice time is he's up to 16 minutes a night. He's
going to score maybe 25 goals, is he not?
I think he's...
That's a hell of a season.
Right. And, I mean, he's starting to play alongside Willie. He's one of the few guys who can keep up with Willie and put his chances away. You know, I don't... know how much longer we can call him bottom six.
13 goals in 39 games for him, 20 points, 13 and 7. 20
plus.
Yeah.
Since he scored that hat trick against St. Louis last year, to break it out, Anthony Pacioli had some stats. Since then, it's been 69 games, and he's scored 26 times. You know, over a 30-goal pace since then.
Yeah.
And again, this guy, not on the power play. That's all even strength. And averaging 14 minutes a night since then.
He's snuck onto the power play since Tavares went out, but prior to that, he hasn't been.
Yeah. Let's get Craig Berube's thoughts on Bobby McMahon.
No, Bobby had a great game. I thought he skated, and like a lot of guys, you know, after the first period, it was a totally different team on our side. And Bobby, you know, he was skating tonight. That's his strength, is his ability to skate and shoot pucks. And, you know, he was solid tonight for us. It's good to see.
You know, the one thing he did on the in this game, and something we've always had an issue with some of the Team B guys and the Team A guys, he's in on two-on-one with William Nylander. It's never even considered a pass.
Yeah.
Just absolutely rips it low blocker, scores. Like, a lot of guys would have deferred there.
But he knows how good his shot is right
for
now.
Sure.
Like, there's not a lot of guys that can shoot it in the net like that.
No, I know.
It's kind of like, you know, Steve Kerr shooting threes for the Bulls back in the days. It's like, yeah, Jordan's the better guy, but if I get the ball here, I'm probably good to shoot this.
I'm going
to
rip it.
Yeah.
I like him, too. In a bumper type of role on the power play.
I think that's a good spot for him.
I think. I don't know if it's less talent than Tavares, but I like the power play kind of brought down a little bit with McMahon. I like McMahon better than Tavares on the power play right now. For what I think the team needs is less than, you know, more talent or more high-end guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think him coming on, it actually settles it down.
The one thing I like is they don't have anyone, to Sam's point, he's always complaining that no one ever dumps it and goes to get it on the forecheck. He's a great puck recovery guy, right? Like rebounds, those sort of things. He's fast, first step, physical, turning pucks over. So, yeah, if you could have a couple of guys, Nyes wins pucks back too, so a couple of guys who win pucks back, you can shoot more and trust that you're not going to leave the zone.
Yeah.
Like that about it.
Yeah, it just seems like they're moving the puck a little better.
Yeah. And a couple of goals. Pontus Holmberg went up between Bobby and Willie. He's looking good again.
Listen, I think with him, it was like when you just look at him, there's no reason why he shouldn't be better and more consistent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if it's just the way they've handled him over the years, that there was just never enough foundation there for his confidence, but he wavers in and out. And now with Tavares out, there's another opportunity, and you're big, you're strong, you can skate, you can take it to the net. There's just no reason why you shouldn't be, where you are as a player shouldn't be more advanced than where you are right now.
To me, he's a guy that needs the motivation. Remember, like, he got, when Minton made the team last year, it was, he got sent down, he didn't play. And then once Minton goes back to junior, he comes up, he plays well. Anytime he seems to get scratched, he comes back in, he plays well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the book on him, but maybe he's the type of guy that needs a little bit of tough love, get him going a little bit, because it seemed to have worked in the past. And he sat for, how many games did he sit for before he got back in? Like, he was out for a while. So maybe that's it with him.
I had, someone I knew who had him with the Marlies was saying that, you know, he's the type of guy that you don't want him to get too comfortable. You want him to be trying to impress, to be on his best behavior, because he's got this great version of his game. But as soon as it's, like, handed to him or whatever, maybe you don't get that same, the same effort, same commitment, same attention. So maybe he is, like, scratch and score a little bit.
Yeah.
Like Robertson, you got to take him out here and there.
All right, let's get Craig Berube's thought on Holmberg, clip 4.
I just like Holmberg's game. I thought going even back to the Jersey game, just the way he's skating with the puck and hanging on the pucks. And I love Willie tonight. I thought he was going. I thought he was on his toes from the get-go, just trying to make a difference. So I made that switch.
Is there anyone he doesn't love?
Probably Philip Myers on Saturday.
But is there, Robertson maybe?
He'd come out and say he loves his 8 minutes.
He's
very positive.
Listen,
though.
We got Sheldon Keefe burying the Devils before we got Craig Berube burying the Leafs.
Yeah.
He said something about, like, our star players need to be way better. End of statement. That's what he said on Sunday after they lost again, the Devils. So, anyways, continue.
I don't know. Do you think he's over nice to these guys?
They're in first place. 3-game losing streak turns into a couple of game winning streaks. So it's hard, I guess, to be overly critical over the course of what they've played now, close to 50 games.
You know, I do think that when I look at the ups and downs of teams around the league, and just the way the schedule has been condensed because of the Four Nations face-off, where there's a two-week chunk just taken out of the schedule, so it's every other night. For a long time, it's every other night. You watch Florida lose 3-4 in a row. You watch Tampa lose 3-4 in a row. You watch good teams kind of go through these slumps, and obviously the Leafs just went through it too. But I do think that you have to take that into consideration, that I think just with wear and tear and illness and schedule, there's going to be stretches where it doesn't look great. Yeah. And so I think the coach is being generous to them with the, you know, effort stuff. Because I do think it's hard.
We were a lot more critical of Willie Nylander than Berube had been last week. Maybe his patience have paid off. Maybe he understands them a lot better.
So do you want to continue to talk about the game on Saturday, or do you want to kind of move into the newsy stuff from today at practice? Because there's definitely some stuff from today that you mentioned Willie. I mean, Berube talked for the longest he's ever talked for one clip about William Nylander today. They're talking about Riley moving around. You know, there's stuff moving around at practice today. So we can move to that, or we can stick with
that. Let's make sure we – no further comments on that. They found their game on Saturday night. They shot it in the net. Austin's slap shot was, oh, my God, that was
– did you know that was his first ever shorthanded goal?
Yes.
And it's – I mean, barely a shorthanded –
he started killing penalties like a year ago.
For sure, but I mean, he's – I mean, scored. How many has he scored in his career? He's almost 400 goals.
Yeah, but he's never killed penalties.
Still, you think.
How do you score a shorthanded goal if you're not killing penalties?
He has been out there killing penalties for parts of two or three seasons.
Ugh.
You would think that one would land on his stick in the sweet spot and he'd shoot it in.
It is wild that one hasn't until year 38 or whatever.
And it was barely a real shorthanded. They had just come off the 4-on-4 and it went in like a second later. So, anyways.
Joe Wall with a couple of big saves, kept him alive.
Okay, where do you want to start? With his clip on Willie?
So this is a longer one. This is like over a minute long of him talking about Willie. So let's strap in here. It's good.
Sit back and relax here.
Yeah, on Willie.
A lot of conversations with Willie, which I enjoy. Great guy to talk to and listen to him. And, you know, I think more than anything, it's like I always, you know, want Willie to open up to me and tell me what he's feeling and what he thinks about the game and what we can do better and things like that. He's got a lot of great ideas. Now, I may not agree with them all, but I want to hear them because there's something there that I might learn. These guys are smart guys and smart players. So, you know, Willie's, you know, it's a challenge like any player. But, you know, I wish, you know, I mean, you'd like to get that game he had in Montreal every night, but that's, you know, that's not reality, but he has a capability of doing it. This guy's edge work and his puck play and, you know, competing on pucks offensively is high end. You know, he's a very good player and, you know, it's always a challenge, to try to get these guys to be more consistent every night. That's a coach's job and it's not just Willie, it's every player. And like I said, it's just I try to really have conversations with him daily. I really do, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to figure him out. I'm trying to hear him out more than anything.
Aristotle.
Whoa.
I love it.
I will say he was in a talky mood today.
Yeah. Yep.
Chatty Berube, but that is.
I'm not trying to figure him out. I'm trying to hear him out. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's Kipper's mantra towards me for four years.
I think it's a test of times for sure in terms of Craig Berube evolving as a coach here.
Mike Keenan was never trying to hear you out.
Or Alex Kovalev or anybody but really Mark Messier and Kevin Lowe.
Yeah.
That's it. But I think Craig knows that at the end of the day, he's at the mercy of Willie and Mitch this year and Austin. I don't know. I'm not sure where Morgan sits anymore, but I assume he's still got a voice in there. Mm-hmm. I think McCabe's voice has gotten a lot bigger, louder, heavier in a positive way for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Tanev's, of course. So they do have some guys in there with a little bit of wear and tear, but Berube's going to live and die by these guys this year. Mm-hmm. So I think Willie knows where he is in the pecking order here, and it's very high. I'm not sure it's as high as Austin. It's at the same level as Austin or Mitch, but he's up there. Mm-hmm. And I think this is a way of maybe Craig making him feel like even when it's not going well, you're a big part of this.
Yeah.
I hope it pays off for him because he's putting the work into it with him for sure.
Yeah.
There's no tough love with Willie.
I think that's great analysis. I really do. I feel like there is no Toronto Maple Leaf Stanley Cup win without Austin, Mitch, and Willie being fantastic. Really, really high-end, great, fantastic. And I think the way to get the most out of those guys and anyone, particularly younger players today, is they have to believe in him and care for him and want to play for him. And his best bet of getting that, I think, is in the early stages of the relationship to say, you just saw me watch you go through a 10-game spell where you were garbage. And did I bury you in the media? I didn't. Yeah. Did I bench you? I didn't. I got your back. You have mine when I need you. It's his best chance at success.
What can I ask you? What would William Nylander's idea be?
Well, I wrote that down. Like, Willie's got a lot of great ideas. I was like, I don't know.
A great idea about hockey be from Willie? Boy, our wingers need to fly the zone a little more.
What if we stretched?
Come on, more breakaways for the boys here? What do you think?
Well, perhaps he'll share them with us one day.
Oh, who?
Ruby. Or Willie.
I do think Willie has a great hockey IQ. He grew up around the game, and he thinks it and sees it and all that. I don't think he's articulating fresh ideas.
Listen, but Willie's issue,
maybe it's who to play with. Or
isn't his, is it not his IQ, not his skill? It's when he's pushing or when he's really engaged. Mm-hmm. The body language is the thing with him. That's all for me.
Well, I don't know, body language.
Well, there's sometimes he's just not pushing himself. He's floating. His feet aren't moving. He looks a little disengaged. That's all we saw last week.
Yeah, it just looks to me not skating.
Not skating
the way Willie can.
And he's one of the best skaters in the world.
Yeah.
And so when he's not pushing or not
noticeable,
digging in, it's very noticeable.
Yeah.
That's the only issue, I think. But it's as if he doesn't want to deal with the alternative, and the alternative is that he's not coming to him with ideas or that he checks out.
Yeah.
And star players have been known to do that on occasion from any team, any era. Mm-hmm. If you lose star players, you're very difficult for a coach. So I don't know whether or not for Craig Berube, if his experience in St. Louis is coming into play at all. Hmm. You know, Kyrou isn't Willie.
No,
but
different tiers.
He might be the closest thing to Willie on the St. Louis Blues. Yeah. And we know that relationship soured, and it didn't end well when Ruby left and Kyrou gave him a couple of parting shots. And of course,
coach anymore.
That's it. You know, that's interesting. He's a little gun shy since that experience.
You look back
not
on
gun-shy,
it,
but smarter.
You look back on it now, and Kyrou said things probably he regretted. Berube probably regretted maybe saying a few things behind the scenes that maybe set that relationship adrift. Mm-hmm. And maybe he's factoring it in this scenario or situation with Nylander. Mm-hmm.
I think so, too. I think that's where you get your education from. And, if that's helping him here, great. We were on this show last week.
I think he does love him, though.
I do think so, too.
I think the way that he's talked about him basically since training camp, that every time he's around him, I don't know, that's just...
It seems like he likes him more than Austin and Mitch.
He has not talked about anyone for any length. And he just went on a minute and 15 soliloquy with like the most profound thing he's ever said.
Willie can do 10 things wrong in a hockey game, but he can break the game open on the 11th time. Mm-hmm. And that's all a coach really cares about is that does the 11th make a difference between us winning and losing?
Yeah.
And every time he's on the ice, he is dangerous.
Especially on
and
Saturday.
And he draws attention like few players can. He is in that McDavid, Draisaitl. You can't sleep on these guys, or else they will make you look bad. And that's where Willie is, and they're hard to find. Berube's got one in Willie, and he knows it, and he's got to nurture that relationship.
I'd be curious to know if Willie could work with McMahon and, say, Tavares, probably, because you got three shooters on that line. You know, I don't know how you figure it out.
I'm not sold on him and Tavares.
I'm not either.
Right?
I'm not either.
It's never been around. It's never been great.
It's never been great.
No.
So
Tavares playing third line center?
I don't know. You know what? It'll be interesting. Very interesting. What will the team look like by the time Tavares comes back? We think after Four Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And where that fit, does it go back? Does Tavares go back into the second spot?
I don't want it to, but I bet Nylander? It does. I bet it does. That's just, I've been watching this team, right, as you have, for many years, and all coaches just go, what about Matthews, Marner, and Tavares and Nylander? Has anyone done that yet?
I've got an idea.
Uh-huh. Hear me out.
And then when that doesn't work, it's like, let's just flip the wingers.
Right, exactly.
Is there a chance that there's success and some chemistry outside of John being in this lineup? And then what does it do when he returns?
Don't know.
Maybe. It's a ways away.
Yeah, yeah.
But
maybe when JT Miller centers the second line, Tavares can center the third line.
Yep. Riley.
Riley or Wall?
Riley.
Riley played 16:43 or something to that effect.
And if you'll notice on the first page of your lineup there, I put the practice lines January 20th, and Riley and Jake McCabe are paired together tonight.
I like it.
Okay. Let's listen to Berube clip 6 on that.
Well, when McCabe was out of the way, I was playing with Tanev. They're good together. They like playing together. And just McCabe played in the right side last year quite a bit for you guys here in Toronto. So, not you guys, Toronto. And, I thought, we're going to try him with Morgan. And Morgan's had a lot of partners this year. And it's not his fault or anybody's fault. It's just how things go with injuries and guys, finding the right shot guy to play over there. And so McCabe's got experience, and he's a very good player and defender. And so that's what we're looking for tonight.
See, another example where he's
protecting.
Could have easily said, we got to get Morgan going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's not, we need more out of him.
He did say some more on Morgan, but we'll get to it.
But you don't get that sense in that clip. It's about just making sure that he doesn't lose Morgan.
Let's listen to
his confidence anyways.
Let's listen to the second clip on Morgan Riley. Clip 9, please, Derek.
Well, I think coming in with the way we wanted to play and do things defensively and become a better defensive hockey team, keeping the puck out of our net, we've asked him to, less risk in his game. And, I think he's trying to do that, and he's done that for the most part. But we also need him to produce offensively. And I think trying to get our D a little bit more active, a little bit more lately, I think it's been better with our D getting more active in the offensive zone, shooting more pucks, getting more pucks in net. That's been a focus lately, and it's been better. So I think you'll see his production go up a little bit.
That is the most coach thing ever, and it actually makes me angry and reminds me of my days as a player, where a coach says, we're trying to take the risk out of his game, but we need him to produce and be more active.
Inherently, there's some risk in production.
Thank you very much. Yes. Just be less risky and also produce more and be more active. Okay.
But if we believe that Berube has asked his team from day one that we are going to be more defensive and we're going to worry about more things in front of our net. And for the most part, it has been successful enough to get them in first place. Like, how does he end up minus 16 or 15?
He's been on the ice for nine empty netters against. So half of that's pretty irrelevant. He's like minus 6. It's not good. I'm not saying it's good.
He's been on the ice for 9 empty netters against?
Yeah. Like, I think it's 7 or 9. It's one of those two numbers. It's a lot.
Okay. So, and Tanev's plus 14.
Yeah.
So maybe just get him off the ice when there's an empty net?
Maybe, could be part of the solution.
I don't know.
I mean, if you're that worried about plus minus, if that's the thing that bothers you is plus minus, sure.
I what bothers me is every time he shovels a puck out of his own net.
Yes.
That's absolutely what bothers me.
Yeah. He has had the, I'm not defending Riley here. I'm just saying he has had the least consistent partner. He's been playing, you know, of late with Philippe Myers. He's had a bad 10-game run. I do think that he has had the toughest adjustment to the Berube system style of play, which he had a quote today where he said they want us to stay closer to our net, like in the D zone, presumably. Like, they're not chasing out and trying to, like, shut down plays. They're trying to conserve. So to me, he seems like a guy caught in between who they're asking to be less risky but produce more. He just seems unsure. And so I don't know if you can play in a way where you say to one guy, you're the guy who gets to go, but everyone else is going to play. Like, it's almost like you've accepted the fact that you're going to neuter him if you want him to not do it, and you're not going to get the production. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's in a tough spot. He hasn't played well. He hasn't adjusted well.
I also have so much upside to him still that we have not seen.
But you're going up against a really good team tonight, and like one of those sneaky, really good teams in the league here. And
Tampa's very good.
Like, so you're now breaking up the best shutdown pair in the league to get your $7.5 million defenseman going here. You're putting Jake McCabe on his offside.
No. You're not trying to motivate Riley or try to get Riley going. You're trying to have multiple pairs that work. And if you have Tanev and McCabe together, you have one that works. You're looking for two.
But I don't know. I think you just put him on the bottom pair. Like, just give him 15.
Who is on the bottom pair? Philippe Myers. He's been playing with Philippe Myers. He made 16.50 with Philippe Myers last game. Can you be lower than that?
Yeah. Like, I mean, he's not playing well. And he's, like Kipper said, he's shoveling the puck out of his own net a lot. Like,
way too much.
We talk about accountability with the forwards and all this stuff. There's many nights where I'm like, is he going to get another shift here? Like, it's a struggle fest for him right now. And I think he's got more to give. But try McCabe and Benoit back together. They were great last year. Put him on the bottom pair for a bit. Let him work his way out of it.
Yeah, to my point, he's been on the bottom pair.
But keep him there for a while.
It ain't working, to your point. The hope is to find multiple pairs that work.
I think playing him 20 minutes with Jake McCabe isn't the solution to a huge problem.
I think we come here every day and say, I like experimenting. Let's see what we can do. We haven't tried this pair. It's two good players.
Surely the 100th guy will make them better.
Well, surely the good defensive guy has a chance to. A great idea.
A starving blue line for offense. Got 3 points out of Oliver Ekman-Larsson Saturday night.
Yeah.
So maybe that comes into play as well, that they just feel like he's got some swag going on right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and NOEL's, he had 9 goals last year. Like, he's someone who can shoot it in the net a little bit more
great,
for them.
Great shot pass into the slot for Robertson to put it home.
You know
good
what
risk
bothered me on that one? Mm. Robertson never went to him, turned to him.
No, he's
Selly to the corner, and then didn't even turn to him. He turned away from him after. Was like,
this is all he wants to do.
Yeah, it's like, come on. The guy just gave you an absolute gift.
It's all about the Selly now with these kids. Come on.
He did. That was a
Bobby
big
McMahon
one.
Couldn't give Nyes credit fast enough on his goal. All the way to the bench. Robertson was this far from OEL and didn't even acknowledge him. Yeah.
You guys sound
I'm sorry.
50 years old.
Kipper, that's an immediate turning point.
That's you.
That's you.
That's a great look.
Immediate turning point.
Spot, yeah.
In the sweet spot. Couldn't have been nicer. Yeah.
We should probably go for Eric.
Yeah, we'll go to break, talk a little Tampa.
All right, Eric. Erlinson.
Yes, you got it, buddy. Eric Erlinson.
There
we go.
We'll stop by after the break. We'll talk a little Tampa Bay Lightning and, you know, similarities, no, between Toronto and bottom six.
I think so, yeah.
Little suspect. We'll ask Tampa's Eric after the break.
And also Tampa hiding Vasilevskiy from Toronto tonight.
Ooh.
They're afraid.
First question to him. Where's your number one goaltender against the Leafs? Listen. All right. We'll be doing some listening after the break when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. This is our Leaf Hour edition. Let's welcome in Eric Erlinson, covering the Lightning for lightninginsider.com. Eric, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. How are you?
We're good. We're good. So right back at it tonight, the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Tampa Bay Lightning. I just kind of mentioned that before we went to break that these two teams kind of look similar to me, where we can look at a lot of high-end, world-class talent up front. Maybe the bottom six gets a little dicey when it comes to needing offense from them. And then the blue line can be hot and cold. But you tell me where Tampa Bay sits now in the Atlantic Division.
Well, it's funny. We talk about the high-power offense, right? And what will both coaches talk about? Well, how can we play better defense? How can we keep more pucks out of our net? And, you know, with the Lightning, that's kind of been their focus this year, going all the way back to the start of training camp. And the big thing that they talked about was their five-on-five play. And they were very power play reliant last year. One of the best power plays, actually the number one ranked power play in the league. But they wanted to be better five-on-five this year. And you look at the numbers, you know, right before Christmas, they were plus 20 five-on-five. I think it's down to about plus 16, 17 right now at this point. But that's a big swing from last year where they were, you know, in the negative five-on-five. And, you know, this team can score. You know, you're right, they don't have the depth, you know, in their bottom six producing. But, you know, they got four 20-goal scorers. Anthony Cirelli soon will be the fifth 20-goal scorer that they have. So offense hasn't been the problem. When the Lightning have struggled this year, it's been, you know, keeping pucks out of the net. And they've been better at it, and they want to get even better at it as we kind of get, you know, closer to March and April as the playoffs start to approach.
Yeah, for our Leafs fans out there who aren't aware, Tampa's first in the NHL in goals for per game. So scoring's still not a problem for this group. So as we move towards the trade deadline, best in the NHL creating goals is a great place to start from. What do you expect the organization to be looking at to kind of make them a legitimate Stanley Cup threat here?
Well, I think the two areas you're going to look at is depth on defense, you know, specifically maybe a right-hand shot. You know, you look at that bottom pairing of Emil Liljeberg and Nick Perbix. You know, they've had their moments, and then they've had moments that weren't so good. And, you know, I think they like their top four, especially when J.J. Moser is healthy. He hasn't been. He's missed the past month. He's not expected back probably till after the Four Nations break. But they like their top four. It's the bottom pairing that they want to find a little bit more stability with. So that'd be an area they look at. And the other one is a middle six. You know, last year they found Anthony Duclair. They felt they needed a top six. I think this year is a little bit similar in terms of a guy who can maybe fluctuate between a second and a third line. You know, that second line right winger, it's been Nick Paul, it's been Connor Geeky. It's, you know, they've kind of moved a few different players up and around there. So I think that's an area they'd want to improve if, you know, you're looking towards March, just to provide a little bit more offensive pop. Because, I mean, you guys know, you get to the playoffs, you have your top scorers and your best players need to be your best players. But usually the difference on teams that make runs are what you get out of your depth players. And the Lightning could use probably a little bit better depth.
So, Eric, what is exactly as a 35-year-old Ryan McDonough brought them back? Has it done everything that they were hoping? Is he still at a good level where you can win a championship around him and Hedman, or is he starting to look his age a little bit?
Oh, no. I haven't missed a thing from 2 years ago when he was a big part of the team that won back-to-back cups and made it to three straight Stanley Cups. And, you know, for a guy that was in Nashville for a couple of years, for him to come back, I mean, he stabilized a defensive group. He takes a lot of pressure off of Victor Hedman. Victor doesn't have to play as many of those heavier minutes, you know, that he has the past couple of years, especially last year when Mikhail Sergachev was injured. You know, so, I mean, you just look at the steadiness. I mean, I just think of Ryan McDonagh, the way he plays, is just professional. He just does everything very well, right? He's not going to wow you. He's not going to dazzle you. But just everything, whether it's blocking shots, whether it's that first pass out of the zone, he's just a calming presence. And, you wouldn't know that he's 35 years old the way that he's continuing to play. He's found a fountain of youth because he's tapped into it. And he just looks tremendous every minute. And he's, you know, he's taken a couple of pucks in the face this year. And, you know, he hasn't slowed down a bit.
League average save percentage in the NHL is around 900 this year. Andre Vasilevsky's a 916 through 35 starts. Is Vasi back? Should Leafs fans be worried?
Well, he's not playing tonight. So
I know.
Like,
what's going on?
But, I mean, you look at it. I mean, I think the Leafs have had his number this year, right? Like, he got pulled in that game earlier this year. game, and that was one of those nights where you're like, boy, he is not, he does not look well. I think he is back in the sense that the back surgery that you had last year, like, usually takes a calendar year to kind of get your feel back. I think he's back in that sense that, you know, he's not, I don't know if he's as wildtastic on a consistent basis as he has been in the past, but I think he's back to being the guy that comes up with that save every now and then that maybe you don't expect him to save, while still pretty much stopping everything he's expected to stop. So, you know, the numbers are usually a little bit higher when we're talking about Andre Vasilevskiy, right? We usually talk about a save percentage about 920. But those numbers, I think, show you that he's back to being basically the rock behind everything that this team does.
We're talking to Eric Erlandson from LightningInsider.com, covering the Tampa Bay Lightning. Jake Guentzel, very difficult circumstances coming in and trying to fill shoes, not only on the ice, but off the ice as well for Stamkos. He is a world-class winger, a guy that can put it in the net. But, again, the transition from Stamkos to Guentzel, how has it been on and off with the fans? And ultimately, has it looked like a move that has paid off for Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I didn't envy him having to come in and kind of being looked at as the replacement for him, even though they're completely different type of players. I think we knew at the end of the day you were probably going to end up with about the same offensive production from Jake as we saw from Stamkos the last couple of years. He looks like he's going to flirt with 40 goals by the time we get to the end of the season, and he's been a great fit alongside Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point. I mean, they've been very consistent when they've been together, and they have been together for a good portion of the year. And he's had a seamless fit. You talk to people about Jake Guentzel, and the thing is they always bring up is the elite hockey IQ. And when you can think the game and anticipate the way that he does, you're going to have a pretty good, a pretty easy transition fitting in with top line players like Braden and Nikita. He brings that veteran sort of savvy to his game. So I don't think anybody now looks at him as a replacement for Steven Stamkos, just because he's filled different types of roles. Like, he's not that one-timer shot on the power play. He's more of a net front kind of guy. And, he plays a different style of game and everything else. So not that people aren't talking about the absence of Steven Stamkos, but I think the way that Jake has played this year has really kind of helped ease that move from losing a franchise icon into the way that he has played.
What were expectations this year compared to reality? Like, I don't know that I thought that Tampa Bay was going to be a Stanley Cup contender, but looking at them now, it's hard not to see it. The pieces are certainly there and they seem able. They've had some weird stretches where they'll lose like four games in a row. I think that happened not that long ago, but it feels like they're still that contender in there.
Yeah, and they're in the middle of a stretch right now. They're playing 16 games in 29 days that will end at the end of this weekend with another set of back-to-backs that they have. I think they felt they had the personnel to do it. Bringing back McDonough was a big part of it. Bringing in Guentzel was a big part of it. You figure Andre Vasilevskiy coming back and hopefully being as healthy as he has been. I think they had the feel of it. And, I think you look around at the East, the Eastern Conference, how many teams can you sit there and say are true, the best of the best in the Eastern Conference? I think it's as wide open as it has been. The Atlantic has certainly been a little bit tighter this year than maybe the last couple of years with, especially the run that Montreal is on. And, Ottawa's kind of right there in the mix this year as well. You look at it, I think you can look at Tampa Bay and say they have as good of a chance as anybody else. As long as they can keep the puck out of their net, I think they're going to be a team that can make noise once we get to the playoffs, because they're going to end up scoring some goals. If they can get to three, I think they're in good shape on a consistent basis.
Eric, one more for me, and it goes around a guy that we love playing his voice clips every once in a while on our show here, John Cooper. He's been behind the bench since, I think, 2013. And just... how's it going still? Are they listening to him? It's been a heck of a run, but is there a sense if this goes sour here, there might be some that go, okay, maybe it's just time for a different voice, no matter how great of a coach we think he is?
Yeah, he's an amazing coach. He really is. Because you would think that, especially in this league, where there's not a lot of patience when things don't go right. I mean, you think back to 2017 and they missed the playoffs, right? And then 2019 with the sweep at the hands of Columbus. You know, maybe now it's time to make the change. He can't get them over, over the hump. But he has adapted so much to his coaching style. How much he leans on his assistants, but he still has this great strength. He's such a kid that how to relate to players and get the best so to him. I think if you look at the last 2 years in the first round exits in the playoffs and some of these veteran guys, the Hedmans that are still here and the Sorrells have won cups, intently tuned in. And, you know, you can usually figure that out when teams deal with some of the stretches that teams deal with. Every team, no matter how good you are, goes through a point in the season where there's some adversity. And, you know, the team has found ways to pull themselves out. And I think because of how John Cooper can relate to the players, you know, he built up this trust between them that even if they make a mistake, they don't feel like he's going to punish them. Not that you don't get punished if you can continue to make the same mistake, but as long as you're working hard and you're doing stuff to correct any mistakes, he's going to have that faith in you, and that's still there. They still listen to him. Every coach is always hired to be fired at some point, but I don't see that happening anytime soon with John Cooper the way that things are going, and continue to go with just how good he's been. And you know, you think of the tenure he's had and the number of games he's won and coached, and the number of other teams that have went through. I mean, think about it. Marty St. Louis is, what, about the fifth longest tenured coach in the NHL? And John Cooper coached him. So what's that tell you?
That's it. Good way to end the segment, Eric. Great point. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the game tonight.
Hey, my pleasure, boys. Be well.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Is Marty St. Louis the fifth?
Erlen Sidden.
I love looking up the longest tenured coaches. Let's see what we got here.
And he coached them.
That's crazy. Yeah, Cooper was March 25th, 2013.
How many teams would fire their coach for Crockett hiring him?
Oh, my God. 30?
But a lot.
I still think before the end of John Cooper's coaching career, he will coach here.
Yeah, I actually do, too.
At some point. I don't think it's in the near future. I think he's probably in Tampa for a while longer. I think Berube's here for
what
a while longer.
What the hell is Cooper, like 50?
That's all we need here, just another guy for a career-ending contract here with the Toronto Maple Leafs.
It's true.
Beautiful. Just
just got to do it once.
Yeah.
No, I
just to see what it feels like, and you know.
What are you talking about? He's 38. He's young. He's young.
St. Louis is the fifth longest tenured coach in the NHL.
Wow.
He was hired February 9th. 2022, so not even 3 years into his term, fifth longest tenured coach. Holy smokes!
Is it Bednar after?
It is Mike Sullivan, Jared Bednar, Rod Brind'Amour between the two.
Still my favorite John Cooper moment was Nick Paul being interviewed in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And John Cooper coming in and getting the room. And it's like, gotta go.
Yeah, Nick Paul is doing an interview. He's like, well, I'll tell. Oh, God.
That's the best reality. The best reality television when you can see
the panic.
That type of power and respect
Paul
you have
new
for
to
your
them
head
then,
coach.
Too. Like, it was like he had been there since the deadline and he was like not looking to mess with his ice time.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool. All right. Thanks to Eric for joining us. We're not going anywhere. We're going to get into the Vancouver Canucks and how close they were. Reported by R. Elliott Friedman that Vancouver real close to moving JT Miller. How close, we'll find out when we return. Rick Dhaliwal, co-host of Donnie and Dolly, the team Czech Vancouver, will be with us. What do you think? Is he gone by the end of the week?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I don't know anything.
You'll get my
point. Ask my opinion? Yes.
You'll get my opinion when we return after the break. More Real Kipper and Bourne coming up next. Don't go away.